Welcome to the American Horror Story Podcast, where the officially unofficial podcast for American Horror Story on FX, the 1984 season. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And today we're talking about episode 4 of said 1984 episode, True Killers.
So we want to talk about, you want to play the name game?
I think this is named True Killers because you get to see some True Killers facing off Godzilla versus Mega Godzilla fashion, Rodan fashion. You got to see Margaret reveal herself as a true killer.
Mm-hmm.
You got to see the real killer.
Montana, too, I guess. True. She hasn't really killed anyone yet.
I don't think so. She's killing this role. You got the true killer, Satan, revealing himself as an active agent in the world, resurrecting his faithful servant, Richard Ramirez. What do you think of this episode?
I am having so much fun. I feel like I need to take a moment to just say that we've talked a lot of shit about Ryan Murphy.
Yes.
And, you know, I think
he's deserved a lot of shit.
It's always been in good fun because these are just fun shows that he's doing. But I am having a great time doing this and watching the show. You know, look, in anticipation of the season, I was a little anxious and weary that we might have another shitty season, but this is great. Everything they're doing, it works with the turn your brain off type of thing that we try to do.
No, you can tell. Plus, they have just a lot of affection for the source material, and also the source material is not like, I mean, this isn't fucking War and Peace. This isn't The Exorcist. This isn't like The Witch. Like, some of the stuff that they've been kind of playing with is actually good. You know, all the 1980 slasher stuff, by and large, is just, you know, popcorn type fun garbage. And this is a popcorn type fun garbage show. And it's just panned in glove. I mean, when Ramirez stepped up to Brooke and I'm like, how the fuck is she even going to get out? Like, it's going to be something stupid. And then Jingle steps into the clearing.
Yes, it was just, it just squealed
with
delight.
We both just screamed on the couch, like, this is how, we didn't even know. I mean, it seems obvious, the two serial killers operating in a camp, that they would have a Jason versus Freddy moment, but I did not see it coming.
Right, in a show where we take all theories, you still have plenty of room to be surprised and delighted.
Yeah, no, it was great. There's just so much great stuff. Just not even in the main event, but just in the margins. Like, I love the way this guy's playing the Night Stalker. It's just like, I can't even put my finger on what all the things he's doing. It's like a drunken hippie Elvis type. He's just sneering and leering, and he's, you know, grapevining and in commando regalia. It's great.
He's really feeling himself. I was weary, not to overuse that word, of them really portraying real life serial killers, but this is just making him so silly that it works. It's not even Richard Ramirez. It's just a caricature.
Yeah. I mean, it's always going to be rough when you try to poke fun at someone who's caused pain and suffering in the real world. I mean, we're going to see how Taika Waititi does with Hitler later this year.
And Jojo Rabbit, yeah.
And Jojo Rabbit. But yeah, I think this is not a sympathetic portrayal of him. It's just it's a over the top, ridiculous, lurid. I mean, him levitating off the ground, instant healing of his injuries, and returning to Satan's service is just. Anyway,
and that's the other thing is I just want to mention up front is we got a little bit of feedback on our Spooktacular, which just came out, the first part.
Oh yeah.
We got a couple of people saying that we didn't actually do true horror movies, or we didn't do scary movies.
They're gatekeeping the concept of horror. Is that what's happening?
Right, exactly. And I think, and I've tried to struggle with what exactly scary or horror means. And it really...
You tried to struggle and just gave up.
I mean, it just really is whatever. I think what I love about horror is it's whatever you're in the mood for.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be like this. This scared me. There has been a couple of jump scares that really worked on me.
Sure.
Which sometimes you go seeking that when you look for a scary movie, or you look for gory type of things if you're into that kind of thing, or you like the Halloweens where it's just a lot of endless tension building.
Well, I think that one of the, yeah, I mean,
those are just to name a few.
Yeah, and I think to be fair, one of the things that we'd watch was probably not horror, but we didn't know that going into it. Right. Everything else, yeah, fuck it. It's horror. You know, right. Come on. Halloween's on a horror movie.
Right. So
Brightburn's on a horror movie.
Right. And a lot of people are saying that this season itself of 1984 isn't scary. And there's sometimes when things would happen and I would turn to you and I'd say, now this is going to happen. And it did. And it still worked.
Yeah.
I think they really found their footing with this.
There's a certain rhythm to it. But like, I mean, that's the other thing is like most of the mid-80s slasher films weren't scary. In fact, a lot of them, like the Nightmare on Elm Street, were kind of satirical and had a lot of elements of self-parody and self-awareness in them. So it's like, but still, you went to go rent them at Blockbuster, they're in the horror section.
Right.
You know, like, there's lots of different flavors of horror. And, you know, yeah, they're all undeniably horror.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Do you want to get into the episode itself?
Yes, I do.
Okay. We begin.
Want to get into it like a knife in the guts.
In epic fashion with a flashback to then.
They start with a flashback.
We see Montana teaching a midnight manor size exercise program for exclusively tight bodied men, apparently.
It's midnight man aerobics.
Oh, man aerobics. Sorry. It was just loaded with minergy. I know that. And she's like, she takes this huge bump of coke and then kind of she like ports her mane back and roars, and they like add in a little bit of a jaguar, like, and it's so over the top. I love it. And she's like, you know, berating these guys and telling them to really get the burn in. And then out of nowhere, the Night Soccer just wanders in, and he's got like, you know, a utility belt and a big hunting knife, and he's wearing like some kind of I don't know, vest thing. He looks like a commando.
Sleeveless shirt. Short jean shorts and the boots.
And they're playing Billy Idol, and he walks in and says, Billy Idol's the truth, man. I'm training. The world's a shit place. Everybody's gone soft. So he's in there, I guess, to her man aerobics to get jacked. I mean, it'll probably work for him, but
I think that they're showing us some sort of natural universal attraction, some sort of universal force is bringing them together for this purpose, I guess. Why wasn't Xavier leading this class? I mean, Montana's doing an amazing job.
Because like I imagine the midnight shift is like the shit position. She's working her way up, because that was her, you know, she hadn't made it as a world famous aerobics instructor. She's you know, putting in her time, learning the ropes, starting
putting
at the
something.
Bottom. She makes fun of him for his Buck 119 knife in his holster, which just establishes her as a badass chick, and him as, I guess, a basic serial killer bitch for having. I did a little research. It just, the 119 is, I guess, one of the most famous knives of this type, kind of Bowie survival knife, kind of Rambo knife, but it's like $50. You can get one on Amazon, and you too.
I may be speaking
can be a serial killer.
Yeah, I may be speaking out of turn here, but for someone who appreciates knives so much, she sure has a shitty switchblade that she keeps on her own person.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's some kind of fucking Damascus steel switchblade. I didn't get a good look at it, but
maybe. But she did get Richard Ramirez presumably to upgrade to this like hook knife thing.
Oh yeah,
that he's rocking with
the real gutting knife.
His aim is still terrible though.
Yeah. She gets in a fight with one of her students over playing Billy Idol and rock versus Cyndi Lauper's pop. And kind of she gets in a real snit with this guy. And she goes back in the locker and is cleaning up. And it turns out the Night Stalker has killed and gutted the Lauper fan, mounted him in the corner of the locker room, like Hannibal style.
Yeah.
Up in the corner. And he gutted him in such a way that, like, the guts are still kind of falling out of him as she gets the full kind of, like, jump scare. And he reveals himself and says, "I did it for you." And she gets aggressively sexual and sexually aggressive with him. and they're like, at some point she jumps up on the weird kind of like bleacher sitting seating they've got in every locker room
benches.
Yeah, these benches, but it's covered in blood. And then he like starts kissing down her leg and licking her bloody toes. And there is some just squick going on here.
Like Montana says, it's a choice.
Yes, it's a choice. It's a choice. So they get the fucking, and afterwards, you know, he says, "Don't worry about the mess. I'll clean it all up. I'm good at it because I've killed lots of people." And she says, "Would you kill me?" And he says, "No." And then she goes, "Would you kill for me?" And hell yeah, he would. And guess what? Turns out Montana's beef with Brooke is that her brother was the best man that got shot in the face or the heart?
The head.
At Brooke's wedding. And she thinks that Brooke is a skank, lied about it, and got her brother killed. So that's their beef as we snap back to now.
That's what do you think about this reveal?
It's what I mean. Look, the Brooke reveal is bonkers. To build on a bonkers reveal with an even more bonkers reveal, why not? Why not?
Right. I think it's believable that they would be all living in the same city and have never met each other.
Especially when it's LA. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And plus, I didn't think Brooke is from LA. Like, she's kind of moved there to get away, kind of, like, disappear and blend in and get away, right, after the wedding?
Maybe. I assumed still, it all happened in L.A.
I imagine you can, you know, run into people all the time without having previously met in a city that big. But, I don't know, maybe it's like small town. You know everybody. Everybody runs into Danny DeVito. Everybody sees, you know, Christopher Walken just walking down the street.
Right. I need Montana to ask herself, okay, what if it was true and she slept with your brother? Does that justify any of this?
Well, especially since like,
does that make that guy right
hey, look,
in shooting them?
I don't slut shame. I'm something of a slut myself, and I celebrate it. But it's fascinating to me. I've seen men and women like this who are very promiscuous, but they're so fucking pissed when someone else's promiscuity affects them.
So like, her brother deserved to die, but also Brooke did deserve to die also.
Maybe Montana herself deserves to die.
All right.
You know, it's like by her own, like if being a skank and sleeping around and destroying relationships is gets you committed to death. There's no way I believe that Montana has never done all those things.
All right.
Before we continue with the episode, I want to do some housekeeping here for baldmove.com. Of course, Rick and Morty, we're talking about season 3 every Tuesday. This week, we're talking the Whirly Dirly Conspiracy and how to wreck the galactic economy with the Wall Street Journal's Paul Vigna. Jim and I are covering the final season of The Deuce on HBO, with each episode released on the corresponding Wednesdays. We're covering the Mr. Robot final season, the spectacular Christmas season of Mr. Robot, with episodes released also on Wednesdays. We're in the middle of spooky October, which means Cecily and I are doing the Cinematic Spooktacular Part 3, The Search for Spook. New episodes of that dropping on October 10th, 20th, and the 30th. All Hallows Eve Eve for your maximum spooky enjoyment. We have a ton of Bald movies coming out. Last week we discussed The Joker. Next week we'll be talking El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie premiering on Netflix, as well as Zombieland 2, /Double Tap. Finally, don't forget, for club members, we have the Fabulous Lunch with Jim and Aaron every Friday. It's the only show on the internet where Jim says
lunchtime.
So be excited. And that's what's happening this week at baldmove.com.
They flash back and she's berating, as the end of last episode, the Night Stalker for not killing Brooke. And she goes, "Now there's another killer here. who might jump the Brooke gun, and he completely fangirls over Mr. Jingles because of course he knows about Mr. Jingles, and he looks up to him like a hero, which I thought was kind of cute and funny, and is going to make their epic meeting later even cooler. Trevor shoots Chet's chest full of adrenaline to bring him back from the edge of death. He does, and he just pumps like quarts of blood everywhere, but he's going to be fine. I don't think he has any blood in his body. It's all adrenaline at this point. And Xavier is like, you know, bemoaning their fate and talking about how like what Chet's gone through is worse than doing porn. And then he realizes, oh, my God, my porn sugar daddy. He drove a caddy out here.
Daddy in the caddy.
We got a boat car that can take us all out of here. We're saved. So Trevor splits them all up because he's the captain of the group. And he goes, I'm going to go get Margaret and you guys go get Birdie and we'll meet back. At Chet, who they give a knife to defend himself with, and then they're off. Margaret is now...
Yeah, it just makes him start, like, pumping all this blood out of him when they do that.
Yeah, I don't know how he's going to survive, but, you know, that's why the show's so fun. Yeah. It's stupid, and the laws of physics and medical science are not observed.
Yeah.
Margaret makes an appearance in this episode. Yay! She finds two of the imposter Jingles lying dead. Trevor finds her inspecting the bodies and insists that they leave because things are getting crazy. But she says there's a school bus full of eager campers awaiting at sunrise, and I have a gun. And Trevor's like, good luck with that, and bones out while she picks up one of the Jingle mask and paints a blood cross on his forehead,
which doesn't quite pay off, but
I thought
for a second that she would, that we maybe get a flashback of her having worn the costume and was the one pushed into the spike pit.
Yeah,
but that didn't really pay off either.
Yeah,
they just knew that wasn't the guy and they left him in the pit.
If this were another show, I'd probably dug into that and the symbolism and is like, is this some kind of sin eater type of thing that she's doing, analogy? But it's American Horror Story, so in the mess hall, Birdie is making bologna sandwiches because she's getting ready for them eager campers and she's good people.
She knows how to make you feel at home.
If you got homesickness, a bologna sandwich and a tinfoil wrap is what you need. Xavier tries to get her to realize that shit has broke bad here. And just as he's convincing her, Jingles jangles into the hall. Xavier dives under the tables to hide. But Birdie, she's like, you know what? I don't got a problem with this guy. Well, I mean, she does. She's scared of him. But, like, she correctly sees that the way to survive is to appeal to his humanity.
Right.
She remembers a sandwich order.
She never forgets a sandwich order.
Straight up PB&J. I think
that Chef Birdie's good people.
I think Chef Birdie has three things in a repertoire. Mm-hmm. Bologna sandwich, peanut butter, jelly sandwich, Fluffernutter. So I think she had a 1 in 3 chance of guessing his sandwich.
Yeah.
She went to PB&J.
Yeah, there's a fun...
Oh, so it calls him Benjamin instead of Jingles. You know?
She remembers his name. Of course she does. But, you know, that's got to be important to someone like that. But there's a fun note here that they're playing Stevie Nicks' Leather and Lace on the soundtrack. It's a fun little Stevie Nicks call out, even if that's her only appearance this season. Glad she made it.
Then she asks him, or he asks why she came back, and she says essentially she felt sad for Margaret because she had her whole childhood ruined, or young adulthood ruined, and that she was still locked in that horrible past, and if coming back here is what she needs to turn the page, she wanted to be there for her.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, that's also another reason why Jingles probably spared her, because it turns out he's got a soft spot for Margaret.
Right.
That we're going to explore in a flashback.
Right. And this is one of those tropes that I mentioned earlier, where as soon as she started to be friendly to Benjamin, mm-hmm. I could tell that she was going to die because she was helping Xavier.
Right.
That's one of those
tropes.
That's
going to be the thing that screws her up.
Yeah.
But
I don't like to victim blame, but she did make that sandwich by putting the peanut butter and jelly on the same side. Like, who does that?
I do that.
On the same side?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I bet you use the exact same utensil and you just put the jelly in the peanut butter or vice versa, don't you?
I do. I put the peanut butter here. Here, listen. The one true method of making PB&J. It's the least mess. You put the peanut butter on to one side. You take the other side, wipe the blade of the knife on,
and then put the jelly on that side.
And then you take the jelly. No, because no, you take the jelly, and then you get all the jelly. You don't ever make a second trip to the jelly jar. You get all the jelly that you want on a sandwich in the middle, and then you just plow that over on, and it glides over to peanut butter, and it spreads real smooth.
Oh!
If you do it on the bread side, it gets all fucked. It's like trying to spread cold butter on
the bread. It adheres to the bread and spreads more evenly.
I don't know what jelly you're using, sister, but my jelly experience, it glides better over the peanut butter side.
Okay.
Makes me a monster, well, in 15 years, I'll just come back with a butter knife and get my revenge on the entire Bald Move family.
I need to process this.
Speaking of psychos, she slides him to PB&J, and he raises his, like, you know, big fucking, I don't know, maybe he's got the 120 knife, and then he comes and he slams it down, and he's just cutting the crust off.
Cutting the crust off.
Because who the fuck wants to eat crust? Everything's cool until Xavier drops the flashlight underneath the table. Birdie tries to protect him, but ends up getting stabbed so many times. And for revenge, Jingles grabs Xavier, shoves him into the oven set to broil, and he rigs the handle so he can't get out. And this is genuinely horrifying.
This is bad.
Yeah. Cody, is that his name? Dakota Cody?
Xavier?
Yeah.
Cody Fern.
There you go.
Yeah.
Cody Plant Man, he's like, the way he's trying to hide in his jacket, because obviously there's all this heat, and they just cut to him slow roasting, and it's
horrible.
Horrifying.
It's horrible. The only thing that would have been worse, I guess, if he had died that way.
Yeah, because I kind of thought, like, Jesus, they're killing a lot of people. Maybe, yeah, he'll just be like fall off the bone, you know, when we come back to him.
Right, yeah. We got some baked Xavier. That's one of the worst torture devices ever. Like the Brazen Bull. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, Brazen Bull. Do you want to talk about the Brazen Bull?
No, I just did.
Okay.
It's too much.
Look it up. It's on Wikipedia. It's fucked up. Ancient torture devices. Like, yeah, I remember. Yeah, okay. Let's.
Nope.
I don't want to turn this into an ancient torture podcast, although that would be super popular, I'm sure.
Yeah. We'll consider it in the off season.
There you go. Brooke breaks out of the cabin that Rita's locked her into for the 70th time this evening. Again, 4 episodes in, same night. She runs pell-mell into the night. She somehow avoids this giant spiked log trap. Like, there's this 3-foot section of log covered with spikes. It swings and just grazes her on the shoulder.
Right. She's played Bloodborne. I can tell you that much.
Right. You're supposed to do a double circle dive through those things. She walks into a net trap and is bundled up, swinging high off the ground, helpless. And Rita, or it's not Rita, it's Donna. Donna killed Rita, appears to taunt her about her situation.
Yeah. So this is part of her study, which this confirms that she is actually just seeing how the serial killer reacts. Mm-hmm. And she's a woman of her word in that respect. But she, I guess she's also the one that did the spike pit trap.
All the traps.
She did all the traps.
Which I remember having a problem with, like, okay, how the fuck did Jingles, like, this night that never ends, how the fuck did Jingles escape, come here, dig these pits, lay these traps? Well, now, again, Murphy's like, you poor fool. You just didn't know that this woman here that came here and did all this stuff. So
there was this woman that's half his size.
Right.
Yeah, just as much time, I guess.
Hey, Donna can rent a backhoe just as well as a man can, Cecily. Anyway, so here's the thing I think is interesting about her. She says that she's here to observe the killers in a natural environment, but she's also got this test where, you know, if I lay these traps, will he kill like a wounded or a limping prey? Or does he need, like, you know, is he kind of like a opportunity predator, or is he kind of an apex predator? Is he like a Gila monster, or wait? Komodo dragon, where he like bites him and then lets the bacteria take effect and then eat him when they die? Or is he like, you know, a lion that runs down his prey?
He certainly doesn't seem to be someone who's willing to kill the easy prey. Like Brooke, he didn't get a chance, but
yeah,
Birdie, he didn't, or he wasn't going to until he had a reason.
Right.
And then when he meets Xavier later on the bridge, he chooses to spare him then.
But, you know, the thing is Donna's nuts because...
No.
I mean, this is no kind of scientific experiment. Like, you're trying to observe in a natural habitat, but you're polluting with traps. And if you want to just see which way they prefer, then you have to have a control serial killer. Like, you're...
Exactly.
I just really disagree with their scientific methodology here. So...
That's your only problem?
Yes.
Okay.
We cut back to Xavier, and he's literally cooking to death. And like we said, it's horrifying. Then just as things look really grim and like pieces of him are sloughing off, Birdie raises from the floor and one of the last vestiges of strength manages to get the little soup ladle that Jingles has jimmied the door with and releases her. But she's too far gone for help and she begs him for a clean death. And he obliges by pushing a kitchen knife into her heart in the slowest, most agonizing manner.
They're both just screaming.
Like yeah, it's the captions were both screaming. And it's horrifying.
And I think we were all screaming watching
it. Yeah, because Xavier's hands are degloving as he's doing it. And also, like, I feel like 2 inches of this blade into her chest. She's like, I changed my mind. I just want to drift off. I just want to bleed to death. Ah!
Oh, this hurts more.
Yeah, it has to.
That's what I wrote down. I can't imagine that this feels better than just slowly bleeding out because you just lose consciousness and then die eventually.
Like you're in shock and all that. Like I, if you got a bullet, maybe fast death, or if you could like with a sword just chop her head off or something like that. But guillotine her, but knife to the heart. That's just more of what you got, lady.
Yeah.
So.
But also, you know, there's also a chance of her surviving, which I would have liked. I feel like Chef Birdie, rip, she was way underserved this season, if this is the last time we see her. Or I'm willing to take on any theories about, like, ghost pumpkin
chef.
She's
a Kathy Bates-style devil worshiper.
Ooh.
You know, like, Kathy Bates seemed like she was a reasonable person until she turned into a robot Satan worshiper last. I feel like that, you know, like, now that we've seen a method for people to return to life, plus the hiker... You know, there's all kinds of ways. The hyper hiker, there's all kinds of things.
Ramirez.
Yeah, but that's the Satan thing that we were just talking about.
We have options, is what you're saying.
There's many options. Right before we switch the scene, Xavier sees his face and reflection of the oven, and it stuns him. Obviously, Xavier took a lot of pride in his physical appearance.
But what now a he's cheap horrifying. Chemical mask. Like, his skin is going to be so smooth when it grows back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's going to have that roast beef complexion. Everybody... Everybody is trying to get in California. Montana runs into Brooke in swinging the net and says she'll go find something sharp to cut her down and calls her so brave and promises it'll be over soon because she's going to run until the night soccer.
Hell yeah. So I got a question for you before I forget to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Montana just one of those crazy people for no real reason crazy? I don't understand why. I guess I understand all of her motivation so far, but why did she try to seduce Brooke? Why was that part of the plan at any point? Doesn't that
because if she could seduce Brooke and bring her back to her house, it'd be easy prey for the Night Stalker.
So if she sleeps with Brooke, she deserves to die too?
Well, I mean, like I said, her slut logic doesn't make any kind of fucking moral sense, but...
Just asking questions.
I think that was the plan. Like, try to ingratiate into her life, find out where she... Although, it's a certain... Seems like everyone knew where she lived anyway. So
yeah, everyone knows where she lives.
I don't know. Margaret is in her cabin.
But her face when she learns that Rita is also out there killing people is priceless.
Yeah, it's like
everyone's
damn,
slow realization.
How many of these people? It's just like we realized the last episode. Like, how many of these people are at the cabin just to be a fucking counselor? I think it's just Chet and Xavier. Maybe Trevor.
Trevor seems pure.
Yeah. And Birdie.
And Brooke.
There's 5 people out of like the 17 people that came to this cabin that are this there to fucking camp and help kids appreciate the outdoors. So Margaret's in her cabin, checks her gun that sees it's loaded, and then grips a carved wooden bear, which triggers yet another flashback where it's explained that Jingles carved it especially for Margaret because... Aww. They had a bit of an attraction.
Oh, he's her Benji bear.
His facial hair is tragic.
It's so bad.
It's like the worst. I've never seen a goatee like this. It's less of a goatee and like literally the remnants of him eating a shit sandwich. It's just kind of like a smear around his lips. It's like
right. Like Ryan Murphy poured some Elmer's glue on his face and just like stuffed it.
Yeah,
into
shot
a pile
a fur cannon at him. shot a pube cannon at him. Call it good. He gives her this bear thing and explains that bears are strong, loyal, and she points out mates for life. Ooh.
Ooh.
Apparently, several of the girls have been cruel to Margaret, who's a bit of a do-gooder, spoil sport, wet blanket, parade rainer.
Flirting with and carrying on a relationship with the tortured war veteran, even though he's much older than her.
Well, see, now after I've seen the whole episode, it seems likely that she did that as a deliberate ploy to either get him to kill these girls or kill and then frame her herself. Frame him herself. So, like, I don't even think she was ever interested in him, which is even more tragic. I think she was just using him from the jump. But he then accidentally cuts himself with his knife, and Margaret sucks the blood from his fingers, which a lot of blood sucking off of digits in this episode, all I'm saying.
It's just not safe, guys. No judgment, but just not. It's just not safe or hygienic.
And he swears to do anything to protect her. The Night Stalker then is seen in a clearing making a makeshift pentagram summoning circle out of branches and just shit he's found in the woods. He slices his palm and starts spreading blood around because he's going to beseech the master to help find Brooke when Montana appears and says, hey, prayer's answered. I know where she's at.
And is this true? I mean, that's my question. I mean, because later we find out that it absolutely is real. It brings him back to life and heals his wounds. So is this the same force that brought him to Montana's exercise studio? Is this the same force that brought her back to him at this point?
I'm going
to
go Joe Rogan because it feels appropriate and say it's entirely possible. It's entirely possible, Cecily. That Satan's a real person in this universe and flexing his muscles. And so, you know, yeah. Satan's he's all the embodiment of seven sins. He's lazy.
Right.
Like, you know, yes, he'll work up a sweat and bring someone back to life. But if he could just have a random blonde walk down the path and say, hey, here's the target, tiger, he's more than happy to use those coincidences, too.
Yeah. I'm just putting it out there as official theory. Montana is the devil and she's devised all of this.
She's Satan's agent on Earth.
Satan.
The Night Stalker appears in the clearing where Brooke is strung up. He moves in to kill her, but guess what? Jingle steps out on the other side of the clearing.
You really shouldn't have crashed this party, bro. Now I'm gonna have to kill you.
And he has this whole shtick about, hey, look, man, your reputation is solid as a killer. Like, no one, you know, you Jingles is immortal. I'm trying to build up my career here. It's my turn. Yeah. And, you know, Jingles isn't having it because, you know, he doesn't do it for the fame.
No.
He doesn't do it for the bodies. He does it for the joy of killing. And I got to say that Jingles gets a lot of early slicing in. But Ramirez keeps it close with his superior, like, speed. Donna's watching all intently, you know, not taking any notes because she's not much of a scientist.
Yeah, she did not anticipate this.
I don't think she's recording it. Maybe she is. I want to talk when we're done with this about where we think this might be going this season.
All right.
So Donna's watching intently. Then Montana jumps her. So you got a girl fight going. You got a serial killer fight going. Meanwhile, Brooke tries to start swinging for freedom in her little Brooke net. Montana knocks out Donna with a sturdy branch before she bashes her brains in with a rock. The Night Stalker gets some really good slices in on Jingles' unprotected back before Jingles lifts him up with one hand and impales his entire face on a broken tree branch, which was a pretty good effect, I thought.
Absolutely. And it's another one of those tropes I called out. As soon as I saw that branch sticking out, I was like, someone's getting impaled on that.
But I thought it was going to be a through the chest. I didn't expect a through the mouth.
The head. And then
spinal cord severing.
And then later, like, it breaking off and him falling. Oh, it's horrifying.
Well, I mean, that's good because Satan can't work with anything that's hanging off the ground.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Actually in the Bible.
Fact.
So, you know, if you want to be protected, actually sleeping in a hammock, great way to avoid demon possession.
Oh, okay.
Just a little tip. Just a little tip out there.
That's why I rely on your Bible knowledge to get me through.
You know what? Far too many people in this world rely on other people's Bible knowledge. I'm just saying. At least read the book yourself, you know? Margaret prays to God, speaking of the big guy. Asks for strength to do his will and battle the darkness. And just then, Jingles enters her cabin. And in a multiple series of flashbacks, we find out that Jingles is the one who took the blame for Margaret's murders, was tortured with electroshock therapy and pumped full of drugs until he himself was confused about what had happened and had completely embraced all the terrible things they said about them. This is the one part of the episode that drug because I feel like we all figured this out.
Right.
But they have to. Like, you know, you can't just be like, everybody's on the same page, right? All right, let's just assume it. You have to do this, but it's kind of boring for everybody that's figured it out.
Right.
And also, it's a lot of stuff that we've already seen. Like, you know, the cabin montage, and now we're seeing it from a slightly different perspective, and you can't trust anything on this show because it could all be redone in a flashback.
Yeah, and there's this, I asked you this question last episode, but again, I want to ask it, and this is like, this is not me poking holes in the script, I just genuinely am curious, if you aren't actually a killer like that, and, you know, being in Vietnam and killing people in whatever horrible ways is still a little bit different from just purposefully killing for fun now. I just don't see how that's inside of you. Like, if I told you that you had killed people for years and years, would you just feel like it comes naturally to you?
Maybe not, but I've also haven't been electroshock therapied and pumped full of drugs and told this, like, as a form of brainwashing over the course of 14 years, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I guess I think that people are too quick to dismiss how you can condition an animal, right, into senses of like learned helplessness. There's tons of studies on how like all the things you can do to animals to condition them to tolerate certain types of input, and you can reward aggression, you can punish aggression, and we often forget that we ourselves are animals, especially, you know, when you're being tortured and dehumanized and all that stuff. So it's like, I guess I bought it. I bought both the fact that he would think, well, I'm a killer and I'm in a lot of pain and I'm going to get those people that are responsible for this, and also the horror of realizing that it's all a lie and you didn't have to do any of this stuff.
Right.
And, you know, also the fact that, like, you know, if you've seen Full Metal Jacket, the U.S. military does a pretty good job at conditioning people to be okay with killing.
I mean,
that's their job, right? So it worked for me.
Yeah, there's just a particular sadism to the way he's killing. You know, it's different from shooting and stabbing, where all the original campers were just stabbed. So like shoving an oar in a woman's throat, baking Xavier, some of these really creative ways he's killing people is just my question. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah, but I guess if he's like,
I'm looking too closely.
If he was actually using guns and he was like a John Rambo in First Blood, like using actual military techniques and stuff you learn in Vietnam, which could still be plenty horrific.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess I see it.
Yeah.
But also it's 1984. He's got to be Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
To you know, this, it's not American Horror Story post-Vietnam trauma. It's 1984. But anyway, she said that she was pissed at him that he didn't keep his promise to protect her, so she made him keep his promise by using elements of his record from Vietnam and, you know, his shit-eating appearance to pin all the murders on him, and so she would take the fall. And he goes in to kill her in anger once he realizes the horror of his situation, and she shoots him dead. Bang, bang, bang. Drops like a big sack of jingles.
Sack of jingles. But this is has Halloween's DNA, and anyone who knows Halloween knows that he's not dead from that.
It's like, you know, when those commercials, those catchy songs that play in your head, the jingles. You know, they get stuck in your head, you just can't kill them, they're earworms. Well, yeah. that's the true meaning of jingles. So Trevor finds Montana and entrusts Chet to her care. He wants them to go find the Cadillac while he goes and finds Margaret, since he heard gunshots. And even though he wrote her off as a crazy person, decides that she's in trouble and he wants to go help Trevor. Honestly, hero of the first half of the season.
Stand up guy.
It's hard for him to fall over with three legs.
Yes.
But he is a very stand up guy. Margaret brags to the dying or dead Jingles that she's going to get to lay her sins on him one more time. Trevor breaks into the cabin, discovers that she killed Jingles, and he's like super impressed. Like, hey, you just had the one gun. I had these two. and I just killed a fake one at that. But then she just guts him like a fish. And she says, oh, it feels so good. I haven't done it in 14 years. She's kind of reveling in the feel of blood and taking lives. Creepy shit.
Is the God thing, is that real? It's got to be real, because she's not doing it for anyone's benefit when she's praying alone.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people have killed the name of God. I don't know.
No, I'm just saying, like, I don't think that was something that was in her mind before when she killed the campers originally. And it's something, it seems to be a personality she adopted over the years. No.
She was definitely that good do-gooder Christian girl at the camp, because that was what was driving the girls nuts. Like, her, like, wanting to obey all the rules and shitting on them for having premarital sex. And, you know, doing drugs. I do think that she felt justified killing these people because A, they're being terrible to her, and B, they're sinning.
Right. They were having sex and smoking and
I mean, we know how movie killers feel about that. So the real interesting thing about her is are we going to find out she's really been on a diet of killing for 14 years? That's highly unusual for a killer, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, you're more true crime than I am. I don't really like it, so.
If she is a serial killer, then sure, yeah. I don't.
Are you a serial killer if you just kill like 14 people in one go, like the way she did?
That would be a spree
killer.
It's
a mass killer. Spree killer.
Yeah.
So is there evidence of like spree killers sometimes, like, you know?
I think, yeah, I think you're right. I think that she certainly in the 14 years after that has run into some people that really judged her or were living, you know, impurely, something like that, that would have triggered her to kill again.
Mm-hmm.
That seems more likely, but maybe she didn't do it because she didn't have a Benji bear to blame it on. But someone like that is resourceful, could find someone.
So she's an opportunist. She's also, there's an element of an opportunist there too.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was thinking. Is like maybe in the last 14 years, she's been super validated because she's the sole survivor and she's had such a hard life and she's, you know, married this older guy for his money and, you know, she's doing, I'm sure we'll get a bunch of flashbacks, but she herself said she hasn't done this in 14 years. So
yeah, there's that. I wish they hadn't put that in there because you could wonder.
I could see a whole bunch of flashbacks of her actually being a depraved killer.
Right. Like the neighbor's dog shit in her yard and then the dog's dead on the doorstep.
Well,
she killed her husband.
Do that.
Something. But she herself said she hasn't killed in 14 years.
But
so
kill a human or does she count an animal as the same?
I really thought she was going to turn out to have killed her husband, but I don't think that will be important at all.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely, there's going to be a desiccated corpse in some mansion at some point in the future.
As someone who puts bleach in my own husband's food regularly, I can tell you that I can see, you can spot one. You know it when you see it.
Yeah. I wish you would just go to the kitchen knife, stop hiding behind your fucking bleach bottles and just do it, you fucking coward. So tired of hearing about this bleach shit.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Anyway. So Xavier's staggering through the woods and he runs into Jingles on this small bridge that I don't know if we've ever seen before. Xavier tries to defend himself. They kind of both lunge at each other, but they both collapse from their various wounds.
Yeah, I'm too tired for this.
And Xavier's like, all right, just make it quick, and kind of surrenders to him. But Jingles doesn't have time for this shit. Says this was never me and leaves him for Brooke to find a second later. So
I think he just blacked out or passed out on the...
Okay, because there's that. Although I don't know if we have any room. Like, there's literally not room in this night's schedule for him to black out for even 30 seconds. Like, that throws the timeline all off.
That's fair.
Is Jingles a figment of his imagination? Is Jingles just preternaturally good at disappearing? Did he pass out? No, they don't really explain that.
Yeah, I definitely think Jingles was there. I think that it's one of those, I explained this in a few episodes ago. Richard Ramirez, the real Richard Ramirez, didn't kill or tried to kill one of his victims once, and she did not die. He took that as some sort of divine intervention and he left her. So maybe Jingles has a bit of that where, you know, if you can survive it, like if Chef Birdie had survived it, I don't think he would have tried to kill them again. Or, you know, it just, maybe he's learned about Margaret now.
Here it just seems like he's trying to turn over a new leaf, perhaps.
Right. He says it was never me. And I think we need to be clear. It was definitely you. You have definitely killed a shit ton of people.
Yeah, tonight.
Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not just free and clear now, buddy.
Yeah. So Brooke finds him and they kind of like briefly wonder like where Jingles went. But then there's an explosion in the distance, but close enough that it kind of lights up their face and they head to investigate. And guess what? Someone has set the caddy.
Daddy's caddy.
Daddy's caddy has been burnt.
Real baddie.
They're going to have to get Daddy's Hot Rod Lincoln next. Margaret, who is still innocent by everyone else's estimation, tells everyone that Trevor's dead, but he died bravely, so bravely. And Montana kind of takes it hard. Aww. She's over there thinking, oh, man.
Yeah, that was her B plan. And she doesn't have a B plan
anymore.
I never
got to exercise that man aerobics.
The rabbit still exists, right?
The rabbit?
Yeah. Donna, a.k.a. Nurse Rita's rabbit, her Volkswagen.
I don't think so.
Why?
I don't know.
The last time we saw it, she was standing there. She was going to give Brooke the keys to go find help. And she's like, oh, really? And then she hypo-syringed her.
Maybe she has to. So she's clearly not going to give these people her keys. So they would have to hotwire it.
Maybe.
And I don't know. These people don't seem like the hotwiring type. Although Montana, maybe. But she doesn't want them to get away.
But you know, this is definitely nitpicking. But Nurse Rita's rabbit was in the main parking lot. The caddy was off a back road where he could just go and snatch campers willy-nilly.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's resourceful of Margaret. Some divine intervention.
I'm trying to think here. So you've got Xavier, Chet, Brooke, Margaret, and Montana at this point trying to get out. And only Chet, Brooke, and Xavier are actually on team, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yes.
The other two are on team.
Well, I mean, Montana could be on team, get the fuck out of here now that her...
Oh, that's true. She wants Brooke to die, but I don't think she wants her... Clearly, she doesn't want herself to die. Probably doesn't care one way or another about Chet or Xavier.
Right. Brooke's going to die at this point. She's going to have to do it herself.
Yeah.
Huge risk.
Meanwhile, Satan resurrects the Night Stalker to Donner's amazement.
Hey, I'm killing you.
He teleports slowly off the ground in kind of like a cruciform pose. His body rapidly heals. His cuts seal up. And then Satan thoughtfully puts him upright. His eyes roll back in his head and they turn like shark black. And he lives again.
Has this happened to him before?
I don't know. I don't know if that's a knowable question at this point. Hopefully we'll find out in a flashback whether he has actually reconstituted his body or not.
Yeah, because his eyes turning black makes me think maybe something actually possessed him this time. Because he left himself as an open receptacle, or has he always been possessed by
something? That would be interesting. He's no longer a Night Stalker. He's actually like some kind of demon possession, a demon host.
Yeah. All this shit that he's been talking just really, really. And he doesn't even get to be here to enjoy it either. Is there going to be a Richard Ramirez and Rita team up? Now, this is an interesting experiment for
Richard
her.
Richard and Donner?
Richard and Donner.
I don't see it. I mean, Donna clearly will be pleased that she has two lions to study in the natural habitat instead of one. But them actually teaming up, Ramirez is not doing this to like stop serial killer. Like he's not interested in stopping and preventing other serial killers. He's doing this for Satan. So like, I don't think they're natural allies. No.
I don't think they're natural, but I think there's going to be something more to that. Or maybe he just kills her in the opening.
And that's all we got for the episode.
Yeah.
Best episode of American Horror this season, which is, they've been all pretty fun. I struggle to think of the best, like, there's a couple pretty good episodes last year before it kind of went to shit. But yeah, this is a really good season, a really good episode.
Yeah.
Do we want to do feedback? Is there any discussion about where this is going?
Yeah, we've got a few things to talk about before we move on to feedback.
Okay. Because here's one thing I want to talk about.
All right.
So you got this long night is going to wrap up next episode.
Maybe.
So we've been told. I'm actually cool with this all staying in the night. Okay, like, because it's been, why not just keep rolling?
Yeah.
You got to introduce some new characters somehow. There's got to be a mechanism for that, but I don't know, maybe the police come at some point.
Well, here's the thing,
they're attracted by an explosion
that I can say with almost 100% certainty. Mm-hmm. And this is could be me being cocky, but I feel very confident about this. A lot of these characters, like Trevor, Ray, who just died, and they hesitated on killing Xavier, I think those people aren't done. I think they're coming back. Mm-hmm. I think that Richard Ramirez, this is a separate idea. Richard Ramirez could have just joined the Hyper Hikers time loop. He's dead, so now he's going to keep circling this time loop here.
So you think if we saw the Hyper Hiker come back, it would look like this? Because I don't think that's true.
I mean, he gets killed and just comes back over and over, so we don't really
know. His body disappears and he comes running into the clearing again.
Yeah. Or this could be a cabin in the woods situation where we're about to reset. Like, too many people died. It didn't go the way we wanted. Let's reset and start over. What would you think of episode 6? They just started with getting in the van, heading to camp again.
I think that'd be cool if they did. If there was kind of like a fun, you know, Prisoner of Azkaban kind of, you know, what's going to happen, and you're trying to see what changes you can kind of make, but. I guess I'm worried that they're going to do a little Roanoke action, because it feels like this is a long night. You've got the scientists studying it, or the cameras anywhere. Then the rest of the season is going to be them filming the film that's based on these events. Yes. And I could see that being fun. But then, of course, all kinds of supernatural events will befall the production, and it's going to be cursed and all that kind of stuff. I could see that being fun, but like, I didn't think that was very fun for the Roanoke season.
No, I think it'd be much more interesting to do like a time loop thing where if they reset it, the next iteration comes around and one of the characters, probably Brooke, stumbles upon a cabin or a hole in the ground somewhere where you see there's 20 of her bodies in there. Like she realizes this is the iteration of the loop where they become self-aware and they get themselves out of it. They don't. I don't know. I'm getting my hopes up for one of my favorite kind of things I see happen in horror.
Yeah.
The time loop.
Yeah, you do like that. Like Triangle, there's a bit of... we just saw Netflix's The Tall Grass.
Oh, in The Tall Grass, which has a bit of a time loop.
They play with a similar type of concepts of like endless time and being trapped in situations.
Yeah, so where are they going this season? Do you have any ideas?
That's why I said that. The thing I'm afraid of is they're gonna be like, oh, you know what? Roanoke was fun. That's a way you can stretch a concept that's 5 episodes long and then 10 episodes. And like, that's the opposite of what I want to see happen. I don't know. The other thing they could do is pivot it to a different type of horror, like a more supernatural horror. They could have everybody be back in like a relative place of stability, but they could go like House, where like there's some kind of demonic force that's possessed Ramirez and chasing them, and it's like a poltergeist kind of thing. Or the movie House, they could go like a Freddy Dream Warrior kind of thing. Mm. Where either Richard Ramirez or Jingles die and they're kind of like wrongly murdered, or they have some motive for revenge, they keep coming back, they haunt their dreams. That would be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 80s as fuck. I guess that's where I want them to go. Like, you've had this is essentially Friday the 13th Halloween. Now with the devil bringing people back to life, I think you've got a real strong like Freddy Krueger Dream Warrior kind of situation that you could set up amongst the three surviving people, like, or four surviving people, I guess. Montana, Chet, Xavier, Brooke. Montana presumably still wants Brooke dead. Maybe she's working with the Dream Killer. Like that, I think that would be fun, and that's what I hope they go for, rather than just how can we keep this concept going and stretch it out.
Yeah, here's the one thing that I can't quite explain or make fit anywhere, the Richard Ramirez and Margaret late night talk that didn't go anywhere. Yeah. He didn't stop killing. He's even more on the side of the devil now.
Also, it doesn't make sense because I feel like he, all the things he said about like no one's ever understood me, like Montana, you didn't feel an instant bond and connection with Montana. You were licking blood off her toes, dude.
Yeah.
But I guess why this explains also why he wanted her to show feet.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just leave that as like a question we'll come back and talk about in the finale if anyone remembers.
Maybe there'll be a love triangle there.
Ooh. Ooh.
Blood-soaked love triangle.
Yeah. All right. The first piece of feedback I have is from Eric. He says, this season is crazy. This is just a stream of consciousness after finishing the episode. Why is Birdie making sandwiches at 3 a.m.? We don't know that. We don't know what time it is. No one was even questioning where Ray was.
It's 8:15.
No one questioned where Ray was, but they did address it in the infirmary.
I don't think that doesn't make sense because a lot of food prep happens really early. Like, I remember, Jesus Christ, I was driving back from the airport one time, and there was like this really famous barbecue joint in our neighborhood, and it's like a family run deal, and there's the dad out there like getting shit ready at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they don't even open until lunch. Now I guess smoking meat takes a lot longer and all that kind of stuff, but like I really thought, like, Jesus Christ, this guy probably works 20 hours a day. Yeah. Or I don't know. So, like, you know, she's trying to get all this stuff prepped for the kids to arrive at daybreak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are you going to do? Prep them, like, the night before and leave them to get soggy in the refrigerator?
Right.
Birdie's good people. She's not going to give you some soggy-ass bun. That's not what kills homesickness.
No.
Homesickness is a nice, fresh bread that hasn't had all the moisture sucked out of it or a bunch of moisture put into it, and she's putting in the work to do it.
And only one bite has a little bit of cigarette ash in it.
Yeah.
That's what feels like home to me.
Yeah. Get a little birdie hair every once in a while because, you know, she's been doing this so long. She doesn't have to wear hairnets. She's grandfathered in, grandmothered in.
Eric continues, why didn't Jingles just murder Margaret after he woke up? Because that would be too satisfying. I don't know. I think Montana's run is hilarious. Big dick dude didn't even get a sick backstory before he got killed. And lastly, what's going to happen to them kids in the morning? He didn't write them kids. I just added that in there. I miss them kids.
Them kids. Look, Eric, if you don't think that Trevor doesn't have a flashback coming the rest of the season, you're crazy.
If you think he and Ray are dead, then you're crazy. You're the monster.
If you don't think his giant hog is going to come and haunt anyone's dreams when they flip this to the Nightmare on Elm Street mode, you got another thing coming.
Right. Next piece of feedback is from Cody S. I called Montana being vengeful over the best man. Booth being the original killer was almost too obvious for me, but what they executed it well, Cecily gets points for pointing out Jingles, was suggestible. Thank you. Still not a fan of using the actual Richard Ramirez. Could have used someone else and called him Richard Reyes, since you're already fictionalizing him both comedically, romantically, and supernaturally. That's fair.
Yeah.
Unless it's going to tie into Hotel in some way.
There's a little bit of commentary about that with the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And I honestly, this is a part where I'm thinking about it because I'm not sure what side I come down on. But like, people were like, you know, this is a racist portrayal of, you know, and I'm like, I don't think it was a racist portrayal of Bruce Lee, but it wasn't a flattering portrayal. And his family didn't like it. And it's one of those things where it would have been just as easy to make him a pastiche of, you know, stuntmen, or, you know, they could have, I don't know how I come down on that. Like, what are storytellers' obligations to real life people, especially people that have not been gone for very long? Because obviously Abraham Lincoln, you can make him a vampire hunter and no one gives a shit. But like, what is people's obligation to, you know, real people that are real life individuals that have affected society both positively and negatively, and people have feelings about? So I don't know. This to me, like, this is a very broad, silly performance of Richard Ramirez, but, you know, clearly there's an argument to be made on the other side.
Right. Jeremy R. says, So the theory I'm buying into is the "Are you afraid of the dark" theory. I believe there's a group of people sitting around a campfire all contributing to the scary story. This would explain the somewhat randomness, the longest night ever, and the mix between supernatural and realism. I also think it kind of explains the egregious use of expositional dialogue by the characters. That's fair.
I mean, it's a clever way to remix this. Would it be satisfying? I don't know.
It's an anthology within an anthology.
Yeah. Is this a little Saint Elsewhere with the snow globe at the end? You know, like I hate the kind of it's all a dream, it's all a story kind of conceit. Unless that's, you know, it's one thing if you know, Inception at the end of it, it's all a dream, because no shit, the whole fucking movie is about that.
Right.
But like things that ostensibly are not about that to be retconned into is just a dream or just a story. I don't know. But again, it's like, if 9 out of 10 episodes are awesome and then the 10th episode gives a sour twist in my mouth, that's actually an improvement from recent seasons. So yeah. I couldn't hate it that much.
Tabinkinsaw says, do either of you have any theories about a twist that would...
Oh, good old Tabinkinsaw.
Do either of you have any theories about a twist that would make sense of this? The season began with a flashback to 1970, which clearly showed us Mr. Jingles killing the teens in the cabin. It did. I was going to point this out to you earlier. Now we're being told Margaret was the actual killer. If that's true, then why the deliberate misdirect at the start of the season?
Okay.
What they did was they usual suspected us. They clearly showed a person jingling, wearing a raincoat and the gloves, killing people. They didn't show his face.
But we saw Margaret having all those things that she dumped back at his cabin, blood-soaked, to frame him.
No, she dumped an ear in his...
No, she had the slicker with her, too, when she was staging those ears in the box.
Okay, maybe. It's her ears in the box. They showed her killing people not wearing those things. In the very beginning, they showed someone wearing doing the killing.
I assumed that she is wearing them just so they get realistically covered in blood. Maybe she took it off to kill the last woman.
No, you're making excuses.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Some excuse making has to be made for Mr. Murphy. Apparently.
For a person who notoriously hates the usual suspects, I've given you a couple of instances recently where you don't hate that, what they've done, as much as what the usual suspects has done.
Yes.
Answer for yourself.
Yes.
Tabinkinsaw continues, it's not as if that was a point of view flashback from a particular character. It was strictly info for the audience. If Margaret is the killer, it means the show itself is an unreliable narrator and we can't believe anything we're watching, which makes the entire affair rather pointless. Well, then why did you come to this show?
Yeah, I mean...
I feel like I'm...
That's the reason I'm pushing back is because my recollection is that maybe... I'm used to pointing out all the stupid things that happen in the show, but I feel like this season they've done a pretty good job of like baiting people to do that. But then with their flashbacks being the maha,
yeah,
aren't you the dumb ones? And I'm trying to see where they might have done that because like, but I'm making excuses, but like the story's not done. At the end of The Usual Suspects, it turns out fucking Kevin Spacey just lied to us for 2 hours and wasted all of our time.
Right.
There's still room for something more clever to happen.
There was also them flashing back to showing her with what we all agreed over the course of a couple episodes were brunette pigtails. Mm-hmm. When now what actually happened was is they desaturated or turned up the contrast on that particular shot and made her hair look dark, or maybe it was covered in blood in that shot. And it just...
I do think they would have...
I agree. It's very unreliable narration we're being given.
I think it would have been... They would have done well to open up the season with the framing of like locals like telling a campfire story.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to know that they do like Jingles Night or anything like that, but then just telling like the story of Mr. Jingles and his crazy cabin assassination, and then these folks are so insane they're opening up the camp again this year, and that's how you fade into the first credit sequence. And then like there's nothing, not shit anyone can say about it, because it's like the show's not the unreliable narrator. These locals telling the story of Jingles are the unreliable narrator. So they could have done a better job of shielding themselves from that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not quite prepared to say that they completely fucked it up. It's possible, in which case, yes, I don't like that, because I kind of agree with Tabinkinsaw's. It does make it feel like all this shit is a waste of your time. But.
Right. Next feedback is from Jeremiah, or Sergeant Gray Fox, as you may know him from early Destiny days with Aaron. Get back into it, man. That's quite a name.
No, I hear year 3 of Destiny 2 is pretty hot. Everybody's talking. It's like it's making the front page of Reddit again. I might have to. I just don't have fucking time, man.
Aaron and his significant other, Jeremiah hopefully says, here is your officially unofficial email confirmation of reception of mad amounts of internet points. You guys totally called Margaret being the actual killer and Mr. Jingles being her patsy. Thought that was a pretty good theory, but glad to see you guys called it spot on. I guess I don't really deserve those points. I thought they were going to actually be working together. But you get it. You can have some.
Yeah.
I thought that was a pretty good theory. Glad to see you guys called it. I'm unofficially giving myself a smaller amount of internet points because I was doing my best to yell through time and space into my podcast player while listening to the previous cast that Montana wanted Brooke dead because she was related to her fiance somehow.
Oh, man. That's actually the bigger pull. Yeah. Because I feel like there's a lot of evidence about the Margaret Jingles thing, but that's just like... That's a cosmic connection you made there, Gray Fox.
Yeah. I stopped watching American Horror Story about halfway through the Freak Show season. I had lost complete interest. With Russell Edgington? How does that not pull you in and keep you there? Especially with his giant third dick. About 3 weeks ago, I decided to binge Hotel Roanoke, Cult, and Apocalypse so I could be caught up. I think you could have saved yourself some time there. Tonight was the first time since Freak Show that I watched an episode as it aired. Listening to you guys' podcast over the episodes on my commute has made the season so much more enjoyable. So
good. That's why we do it. We're trying to make the seasons much more enjoyable.
So theories and questions for 1984. Will this be the first season with no Evan Peters and or Sarah Paulson?
I think that's confirmed, right? Unless they make a breezy, like, last... here's the thing. If I'm Evan Peters... and I'm Sarah
right
Paulson.
Now.
Yeah, I'd be screaming right now. I would show up for a day of filming to do one of my many, many, many characters that they could weave into this story and setting just for funsies and to say that, yes, I was in all the seasons. If I was Evan Peters, I might be reluctant to show up with Emma Roberts because I've just become aware of this in the last week. I think you told me this a season or two ago, but like there were some pretty serious domestic abuse allegations against her.
Yeah.
Like biting him in the face and causing scarring. And are they still together?
I don't know.
I think a lot of that was swept under the rug because he took her back, which that's always fucked up to me. Just because someone makes a bad decision to be with their abuser that we're going to like, We're gonna look the other way about it. Like, if Rihanna takes back Chris Brown, does that make Chris Brown a lesser piece of shit? I say no. So I guess maybe that would be weird to see them back like that. But they were back last year, so I don't know.
Is this turning into a celebrity gossip podcast? I think that
I didn't mean for it to.
I think that you're right. I think it's hard for us to be witnessing a public affair of very young people having with famous parents, I assume, that are kind of living their life out loud like this, and who knows what happens. So it makes it worse, I think, to try to speculate and talk about their relationship. But also at the same time, if she is an abuser, then what kind of people are we for supporting?
Is it an if? Because I thought there was like police records and stuff. Like, this isn't like a he said, she said.
No, I'm saying that right now, I don't know for sure to say and like commit to a podcast that we're going to release.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
So I hope that answers that question.
Fair enough.
How in the purgatory are they going to make that small cast land or last for at least 6 more episodes? Brooke, Xavier, Montana, Chet, Faye, Greta, Margaret, Jingles. The Return Night Stalker, you didn't mention here the Pumpkinhead Ray and Chef Birdie is going to be cooked into sandwiches, I assume. They'll make it work. There's basically 3 groups of the goods, Brooke, Xavier, and Chet, the killers, Jingles, Margaret, and Night Stalker, and the need to dies, Montana and Donna, the fake Rita. Could we see Jingles leave the killers group and become a good? Do you think he will save the others from Margaret and the Night Stalker now that he knows he isn't a killer originally? Again, he's a killer now, so there's not redemption on the horizon for him,
well,
I believe. I'm digging
my
heels in about that one.
Because I could also see a somewhat satisfying arc where the truth about his original innocence gets out, and they're able to frame all the killings on Margaret, and then he could be framed as the hero that's put an end to it.
But he still did it.
Yeah, but yes, but I don't know. Like, it's a Winter Soldier situation. Is Bucky a bad guy because he was brainwashed to commit atrocious murders. What the fuck?
Atrocious murders.
Murderous murders and atrocious atrocities. Is he a bad person or is he a victim of the Nazi scientists?
Both.
I think that's bullshit. I think that if you're not if you're legit brainwashed or hijacked into doing something, then you can't be held responsible for those actions. You're not capable at the time.
All right.
Now, maybe he needs to live in a mental institution the rest of his life because of the very real trauma that he's faced. I don't think that he maybe needs to be released into public supervision, but like, also I'm treating this like a real show that's serious. There's like some stakes and stuff. So
leaving medium rare Xavier alive on the bridge seems like an indicator of a face turn to me, but what about the ghosts? Will Ghost Trevor have his ghost schlong dragging on the ground through the cabins is the new thing that goes bump in the night?
He won't be Mr. Jangles, he'll be Mr. Floppy Slap.
Mr. Bangles. Are there going to be any connections to previous seasons coming up? Ghost Trevor and Montana hooking up to make another demon seed baby. That I like. That's tasty.
I think that Murphy seems to be really charmed by doing that. And it also, I think there's a ghost of a chance for Peters or Paulson to show up.
I see what
and
you did there.
It would, the most likely vector. Okay, so mid 80s, you're more steeped in this lore than I am. Who do we got to work with? What's going on mid 80s in American Horror Story land?
In American Horror Story?
Yeah. Like, has there ever been an American Horror Story set in the mid 80s? I'm trying to think of like all the characters that Peters could be. Could Peters be an aged lobster boy? Like mixed up in this somehow?
Could
Paulson be...
It could be... We could have...
A conjoined twin?
The alien twins.
Yeah.
Could show up. As I like to keep reminding everyone from the Asylum season.
That's one... I like that because I think they'll eventually show up because they were kind of like a mystery that's out there.
Yeah. I don't know. This plays with time and space so much that when you were talking about ghosts and witches that time travel, it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
It really could be.
Mm-hmm.
He continues, after being out on HS for a few years, I'm totally back on board thanks to you guys. Revitalized.
Satan.
Yes. Thank you for joining us. All right. Final piece of feedback is from William, who has an interesting idea about Sarah Paulson. Am I the only one who's noticing that this season is referencing previous seasons pretty hard? The ghost characters like the ghost from Murder House. Matthew Morrison's wiener is a reference to Dennis O'Hare's similar endowment freak show.
Mm.
Fair. We have the Night Stalker resurrected by Satan, as a reference to Apocalypse. We have the asylum that Mr. Jingles escaped from. And we haven't had anything witchy happen yet, but we all know that witches are the devil's greatest adversary from Apocalypse.
I mean, arguably... Ramirez did some witchcraft this episode. I mean, he drew a pentagram circled summoning circle, started infusing it with his own blood. I mean, what is he doing if not witchcraft there?
Well, what we learned
that's
from
literally the definition of witchcraft.
No, but what we learned from Apocalypse is what he's saying is that the actual witchcraft and devilry are at opposed to each other.
Right. They retconned witchcraft.
Yeah. So I think that's the witchy thing, William, is that they can just do anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think those kinds of references are overt, but we very much appreciate seeing them. I think that isn't lost on Ryan Murphy. Then he continues, the Night Stalker was actually seen in Hotel, which also dealt a lot with serial killers in general. Yeah, so I think there's a reason they chose him, and it doesn't mean nothing. Finally, I have a theory about Sarah Paulson's character this season. I think she will be playing Lana Winters interviewing the survivors of Camp Redwood perhaps a couple of years later. I love this.
She's come back a few times.
Hotel? She was in Hotel. Yeah, you're right. So Lana Winters interviews the survivors of Camp Redwood.
Oh, I'm getting her confused with the psychic. The psychic is what... Or did they both?
Did they both show up in Hotel? No, Lana Winters was the interviewer, but the medium from Murder House showed up in Hotel.
Definitely, yes.
Okay, that's where we're getting confused.
They have very similar affects.
So either one, really, would work here with the time looping ghosts and pumpkin heads, Knight Riders. I love that theory. That's all the feedback we have this week. If you have any feedback to send us, you can do so ahs@baldmove.com. Weekly, our fans, or Ryan Murphy's fans, get together in the forums to talk about American Horror Story, and you can join it there.
At forums.baldmove.com?
Yes. That's all I've got.
That's all I got.
Thanks for coming, guys.
Yep, we'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
Have a good weekend.